Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to Murder Mile. Today, I'm standing on Denham Street in Soho W1. 30 yards south of the unfortunate Mr. Johnson. 50 yards west of the suicide of Mabel Hill and Herbert Turner. 20 yards north of the last hangout of the Blackout Ripper. And 10 yards east of the fingers which didn't lie. Coming soon to Murder Mile. Denham Street is a grubby little slit in the city, made famous as this is what's behind the Piccadilly lights. As a one-way street stretching 121 metres from Sherwood Street to Shaftesbury Avenue, even though it's smack bang in the beating heart of the West End, nobody goes here, as it's grim, grimy, and dead. It's the kind of dark, vapid hellhole where the sun can't be asked to shine, where life can't be bothered to exist, where litter whistles down, only to go, oh bugger, and hope it's blown elsewhere, and where steamy dog turds cling to the bum lips and dangle for a few seconds longer for fear of being dumped. Under construction, the south side is being ripped out and turned into, yes, you've guessed it, luxury flats. But back in the 1910s, among a sea of bars, clubs and small casinos, at 21 Denham Street once stood Coventry Chambers. A three-story mansion block comprising of 15 self-service flats for wealthy bachelors and their live-in staff. In flat 8 lived Julian Hall, a 26-year-old aviator, sportsman and chronic alcoholic. Being depressed and drinking himself to death, the life of this wealthy bachelor was in chaos, as two women vied for his love. On Tuesday the 15th of April 1913, having promised to marry both of these women, Julian would be found dead in his bed, just hours before his marriage. But which of his lovers would kill him, and why? Was it out of anger, love, jealousy, or as part of a premeditated revenge? My name is Michael. I am your tour guide, and this is Murder Mile. Episode 186, Dead Rich. For those who thrive on chaos, Russian roulette is the ultimate game of chance. With six chambers of a revolver, loaded with a single bullet, and the barrel randomly spun, each click of the trigger takes you one step closer to fame, glory, money, and excitement. But one chance in every six will always lead to death. To many, it may seem stupid, but unable to cope with the boredom of an unexciting life. For some with a death wish, is the only way to live. Julian Bernard Hall, known to his pals as Jack, was born in 1887 in Oswestry Street, in the county of Shropshire. As a young boy, born to a wealthy merchant and a woman of means, Jack had come from money. He didn't know poverty, he didn't know hunger, and he didn't know the struggle of never knowing where his next penny would come from, as the family fortune would always ensure he was never without. His life was his to live, as he wanted, when he wanted, and how he wanted. But when you're given everything you ever desire, where do you find your excitement? In 1896, age 9, Jack was booted off to boarding school, where for 10 months of the year until the age of 15, he would live amongst 900 other boys whose parents had handsomely paid to have their love-starved children educated by strangers. Never to be loved, never to be hugged, never to be praised, and riddled with trauma and abandonment. As was the done thing, his future had already been mapped out for him by his parents. Boarding school was at the Eastman's Royal Naval Academy in Portsmouth, a preparatory school in Southsea that prepared boys for careers in the Royal Navy. With an impressive list of alumni, including captains, admirals and field marshals, with a curriculum of sports like boating, gym and tennis, lessons in Greek, Latin and English, and instructions in knot tying, shooting and navigation, this gave him no excuse not to exceed. Upon his graduation, both Jack and his brother Bernard quickly became officers in the British Navy. And although keen marksmen with a love of guns, Jack sought out the precarious danger of innovation. In 1903, Wilbur and Orville Wright performed the world's first powered flight. Mankind had broken the barrier of our bodies and our limitations of nature. By December 1911, as the precursor to the Royal Air Force, the Royal Naval Flying School was formed and later absorbed into the Royal Flying Corps. With the principles of aviation engineering still in its infancy, to fly a squadron of manned kites, hydrogen-filled airships and early biplanes like the BE-2 and the Arvo 500, they needed fearless men who scoffed at danger, spat out fear, and dismissed their deaths, knowing that each day may be their last. As a thrill-seeker with an innate disregard for his own life, Jack was a born aviator. But when he wasn't flying, to pacify the dullness of his ordinary life, he would seek out his thrills elsewhere, with drink and girls. Jack was the epitome of a playboy, tall, rich, and handsome. Sporting the latest fashions, an aviator's moustache and a swashbuckler's swagger. Wherever Jack went, he was always seen with a six-shot revolver on his hip, a big slug of whiskey in his fist, and a beautiful girl on his arm. By day, he slept off his hangover, as by night, he lived for the thrill of bedding babes, building back booze, and as a man with a fortune of £18,500, making him a millionaire more than two times over today, he would blow more money per night at the casino than most people earned in a year. to maximize his downtime, Jack moved into a bachelor pad at 21 Denham Street in Soho, barely 50 feet behind the infamous Piccadilly Lights, but also in the shadow of some of the best West End bars. Living on the second floor, Flat 8 was a classic man cave, with all of the mod cons, but none of the homely touches of a man with marriage on his mind. With a booze cabinet and a collection of guns, to facilitate his often delicate state, he had two live-in staff, Lewis Royal his valet, and Nellie Champion his cook. There was no denying that Jack was a consummate playboy who lived for the thrills of life without any of the worry. But having had very little affection as a child, he always sought out the love of a good woman. Only he didn't know any good women. In January 1910, Jack met and fell in love with a music hall artiste called Ada Knight. And whereas some described her as a singer, others suggested that she was a prostitute. Not a low-rent streetwalker who picked up strangers for 6 minutes of the old in out, but a high-end flirt with no plan to work a day in her life and every aim to get a rich man to fall for her charms, to move into his home, and get him to marry her and keep her in the lifestyle she'd become accustomed. It's hard to pin down exactly who she was, as Ada Knight went under the alias of Margaret Roberts, Lally Roberts, and using Jack's surname as if she was already married to him, as Lally Hall. After more than 2 years of romance, being smitten, Jack bought her a diamond engagement ring. He promised her every day that he would marry her. And to cement his undying love for Ada, on the 17th of August 1912, Jack had his will redrafted and the bulk of his estate to her. Sent to his solicitor, it was dated, signed, witnessed and stamped. Meaning that if this aviator ever died, she would be rich. With her love etched in stone and her prosperity assured, Ada went away on a well-earned holiday. Only without her distraction, Jack's biggest enemy was boredom. When Jack flew his biplane, he was alive. But when he was grounded, he was as good as dead. Gripped with bouts of depression, his valet, Lewis Royal, would state that Jack was often emotional and prone to anger. He always sated his anxiety by downing 1.5 bottles of brandy a day, and with a set of loaded revolvers stashed beside his bed in his travelling trunk, suicide was never far from his mind. In July 1912, just weeks before their engagement, Jack had broken his right hand and was unable to fly. With Ada away for 4 whole weeks, he did as he always did and sought out some affection. His latest love would go by the name of Jeannie Baxter. She would bring him life, but also death. Like Ada, Jeannie Baxter had a dream of becoming a kept woman of a wealthy husband. Never one to lift her hand if she could help it. It's likely that Jeannie came from nothing and never wanted to go back. Born in 1889, somewhere in Ireland, 24-year-old Jane O'Kane often went by several names to disguise her past. Jeannie was a nickname. O'Kane was reserved for legal documents. and having been briefly married to a man of money, she went by his surname of Baxter and the respectable title of Mrs. This respectability was vital to gloss over the fact that Jeannie was a prostitute. As a single mother to her 7-year-old daughter, also called Jane, Jeannie was keen to continue their life of luxury and comfort by finding another man of means to marry. Bouncing from man to man and bed to bed, with a ring finger itching to be blessed with a diamond and a band of gold, it wasn't the dashy aviator Jack Hall who had won her heart, but the mysteriously titled Mr. Unwin. A slew of men aside, Jeannie was the kept woman of Mr. Unwin. Knowing little of who he was, we know he was independently wealthy, and that for the last 2 years, he had paid her a generous allowance of £5 a week, as well as covering her rent on an upmarket flat at 24 Carlton Mansions in Maida Vale. Besotted, Mr. Unwin had professed his undying love to Jeannie. And although to him she was his wife-to-be, and to her he was a meal ticket, their marriage was on hold, as for long as she still had a breath in her body, his mother would not allow this wealthy merchant and this easy sex worker to wed. His mother was old and frail. But for Jeannie, her sad demise couldn't come quick enough. Therefore, it was entirely by random chance, with Ada on holiday and Mr. Unwin at his mother's, that possibly in the drunken half-light of the Coventry Club on Denham Street, that Jeannie met Jack. In September 1912, Ada Knight returned from a holiday, only to find Jeannie in her fiancé's arms, flat and bed. Jack didn't see what all the fuss was about. He was a bachelor, Jeannie was single, and yes, he was engaged to Ada, but it wasn't like they were married. As Jeannie moved in, Ada moved out. And although both women lived their own lives in their own homes, when Ada confronted Jeannie to chastise her for stealing the man she planned to marry, Jeannie admitted, "To be honest, my dear, I'm not that interested in Jack. I've got Unwin." Whether it was down to his arrogant wealth or his confused alcoholic state, this seedy little love triangle continued for several months, with Jack stringing both women along. As a depressed drunk, Jack wanted the best of both worlds, with both women on his arm and in his bed, at his beck and call. On the 4th of December 1912, handwritten in his drunken scrawl on a crumpled piece of typing paper, Jack rewrote his will, stating, "This is the last will and testament of Julian B. Hall. I revoke all other wills I may have made. I bequeath all that I possess in my estate to Jean Baxter O'Kane and to Ada Knight to be equally divided." The will was signed and dated by Jack, and it was witnessed by two signatories. In the event of his death, both Ada and Jeannie would become exceedingly wealthy. That's how it should have been. And although Jack was still stringing Ada and Jeannie along, what he couldn't accept was that Jeannie didn't want him. She wanted Mr. Unwin. On Tuesday the 8th of April 1913, 1 week before his death, things would come to a head. In the 4 months since writing his last will, Jack had continued seeing both women and keeping them apart. At 1:30 p.m., Ada Knight was let into 21 Denham Street by the hall porter, who knew her name and face, but didn't know that Jack was two-timing her and that Jeannie Baxter had spent the night in his bed. Inside his bedroom, as he lay there nursing a roaring hangover, his two lovers fought over him.
What are you doing here? I could say the same about you. He said he'd finished with you.
He said the same about you. You're finished.
I have every right to him.
But I was with him first.
Oh, really?
With the only obvious winner being Jack, unwilling to be a booby prize, the women gave him an ultimatum.
Which one of us is it to be? You can't have us both.
Like the spin of a barrel of a half-spent gun, Jack had a 50-50 chance of getting his answer right and getting his answer wrong. And having chosen Jeannie, his new squeeze of a few months as the woman he loved, over Ada, his fiancée for the last 3 years. Ada smacked Jack in the mouth, cutting his lip with her engagement ring, and she swore that she never wanted to see him ever again. The second the door slammed shut, it was clear that Jeannie had won. But had she? Across the afternoon to the early evening, Jack and Jeannie argued bitterly. Jack had given up Ada for Jeannie, only Gina didn't want Jack as she had Unwin. A man who had made her a kept woman, and whose mother's decline meant that the two would soon be wed. Jack was rich, but he wasn't that rich. With Jeannie unwilling to give up her other millionaire, Jack struck this two-timing harlot across the chin with a loaded revolver, and rightly, Jeannie left. Left alone, and drinking himself into an angry alcoholic stupor, the man who lived for danger and chaos was left with nothing but his own black thoughts. Before she left, it was said he had put the muzzle of the gun to his temple and professed, "I'm sick of everything. I am not afraid of death." Death had never been more than a hair's breadth away from Jack. And now, it was even closer than he would know. Through the hazy gauze of drink and solitude, his bitterness festered until he could stand it no more. Later that same evening, Jack took a taxi from Denham Street to Carlton Mansions in Maida Vale. And in the parlour of Jeannie's flat, which was owned by Mr. Unwin, Jack met his rival for the first time. Jack was drunk. Very drunk. As from his pockets, he pulled two revolvers. Whistling down the barrel, he assured the startled couple, "I'm not here to kill myself." As in the spirit of a fearless aviator with a daily death wish, his plan was much more reckless. As he stated, "You love this girl, so do I. I'm going to have her." As Jeannie had done to him, Jack would make her choose. Two men, two guns. We light a cigarette. We turn out the lights. And by the red glow of its tip, we shoot until the other man is dead. What do you say? Jack was serious. Mr. Unwin was terrified. And having said no, Jack fired wildly, hitting a photograph, a champagne bottle, and splintering the sitting room door, having fired over his shoulder. Jack popped the gun's muzzle in his mouth, and according to Jeannie, he asked her to pull the trigger. Jeannie was a woman who loved to live, so she didn't. And as his booze-sozzled brain began to feel like a sack of lead, Jack apologized and curled up on the hearth rug, where he slept until the morning. Jeannie would never have to choose between her two lovers. As in fear for his life, Mr. Unwin wanted nothing more to do with Jack, and therefore with Jeannie. This kept woman with a lifestyle to live and a daughter to fund had lost everything. Her allowance, her flat, her country home, and a marriage to a man who today would be worth more than £6 million. With Mr. Unwin gone, and Ada forgotten, all Jack and Jeannie had was each other. But did they? On Sunday the 13th of April 1913, 2 days before his death, Jeannie informed her maid, Teresa, of the good news. Jack has promised to marry me by special license next Tuesday. In her own words, having made a mess of everything with Mr. Unwin, Jack would make amends by marrying Jeannie and making this woman of modest means a millionaire's wife. On her mind should have been love. Only with a glint of glee at already being in his will, albeit equally split with Ada, Jeannie was heard to declare, if he was to have an accident, a fatal accident, I would get a very large sum of money. In short, the second Jack died, Jeannie would be dead rich. Tuesday the 15th of April 1913 was to be the day of the marriage of Jeannie Baxter and Jack Hall. Having been bedbound for days, with his stomach empty, except for his regular bottle and a half of brandy, Jack lay crumpled and slumped in his pajamas, as depressed as ever. At 9 a.m, Jack rang the service bell and asked Lewis Royle, his valet, to make breakfast for Jeannie. Having had a fitful night, both were silent, but not angry, just tired. At 10:30 a.m, again Jack rang the bell. But instead of an empty breakfast tray to clear away, on the bedside table, Lewis found a fountain pen and a folded piece of paper. With big grins, Jack declared, I am going to get married to Miss Baxter. At which a beaming Jeannie confirmed, that's right, Lou. Keen to make everything right, Jack got his two staff, Lewis's valet and Nellie Champion, his cook, to witness a document which revoked his two previous wills and left everything to Jeannie. Across the next hour, not a single sound was heard coming from the bedroom until 11:45 a.m. 5 shots, no screams, and by the end of the 10 seconds, Jack Hall was dead. Running from the room, Jeannie was heard to shout, Lou, I've shot Mr. Hall. Run and fetch a doctor. Charged with his murder, Jeannie told the police of his alcoholism, his depression, his death wish, and with his temperament swinging from manic to moody, that he had told her, "You and I would never get on if we were married. It is better I should finish it." Jack pulled out a loaded revolver, popped the muzzle in his mouth, and in Jeannie's own words, he whistled down the barrel as a black mood enveloped him. Fearing for her life, she scrawled a note asking a maid to look after her daughter in the event of her death. And in the struggle to wrench the gun from his hand, she shot him twice and fired three more bullets as she fled in terror. On the 3rd of June 1913, at the Old Bailey, Jane Baxter, known as Jeannie, pleaded not guilty to the charge of murdering Juliet Bernard Hall, also known as Jack. And as she did so, she smiled to her friends in the court. Confident of her acquittal, the newspaper stated that Jeannie left heartily from the dock. And yet, having deliberated for just 55 minutes, she was soon stunned into silence as, having been found guilty of his manslaughter, a terrified Jeannie was led away to the cells to spend 3 years behind bars. Released from prison on the 14th of June 1916, Jeannie Baxter, the sole beneficiary of Jack Hall's fortune, received a rude awakening. Debated at probate court, Sir Samuel Evans would state, "As they were unmarried, as her conviction for his death had deprived her of her rights, and as the last two wills were illegal as they hadn't been submitted to a lawyer, that the rightful heir to Jack's fortune should be his former fiancée, Ada Knight, a woman who was to become dead rich."
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
The world of 911 emergency dispatching is brutally diverse. One minute you can be talking with someone about parking violations.
What's the process we are to take to have people towed? Because it's actually delaying the mail.
And then all hell can break loose. Then the rest of the day is crazy. We could have murders.
Hill County 911, what's your emergency?
I just killed my children.
Home invasions.
He's in my house. He's in my house.
I shot him.
You shot him?
He was coming up towards me and I shot him.
Natural disasters.
Tornado came through and got us. I'm buried under a bomb to roll my life.
Even bombings. My show, Music City 911, will put you in the dispatcher's chair. Put you ear to ear with the callers and responders. And keep you on edge from start to finish. I hope to both educate and entertain, as I'm a 911 dispatcher with over 20 years experience. And just like dispatching, every episode is different from the last. Music City 911. Real 911 calls, real 911 dispatchers. Available to listen to on any podcast app.
Does it, doesn't it? Yeah. Good. Whoa! Oh, cripes, lordy. Lorks a lordy up on high, ladies and gentlemen. How are we all? I'm going to take your little hat off. Here we go. There we go. Just taking your little hat off. Move away the little pop filter. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to... I was about to say X-Files, then. What is going on in my head? It's because I had a conversation with someone the other day about X-Files. Now I've got X-Files in my head. This is not X-Files. This is Extra Mile. The unedited, unscripted bit. See, if it was edited, I would have edited out that bit. The bit where I fucked up and said, this is X-Files. Because I'm clearly not Mulder or Scully. I would have edited out when I said Scunny as well. Or Smoky. See, I can't. I'm all over the place today. What is going on in the world, Michael? Cripes. So this is it. Extra Mile, unedited, unscripted, bloody, 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 blah, blah. I'm not going to make myself a quaffy, only because I'm still drinking a quaffy. But I am having... Oh, yeah. What is that? What is that? That, my friends, is a Cadbury's Crunchy. Oh, is it one of the best chocolates out there? I think so. Nice proper chocolate on the outside, British chocolate, which means it's the best chocolate. Now, not as we've discussed it before, Hershey bar chocolate, which is dog shit. But inside is a nice honeycomb crisp in the centre. God, it's good. Although, when it gets into your teeth, you can kind of feel your dentist crying in his sleep. So, what's going on? As always, we do a little bit of a waffle. I'm going to thank my Patreon subscribers and donators now, if that's okay. So, new Patreon subscribers, thank you very much. And I thank you for your delay. Not your delay, my delay. Because I had to delay because I was doing busy last week. I was ahead of schedule, therefore you're not going to get this until the date that I emailed you about. But thank you to Yasmin Nixon, Sarah Thompson, Andrea Lindenberg, and Huyin Nguyen. Oh, Michael, you had that. You've been practicing all week. Huyin Nguyen. Right, now, I saw your name and I was like, right, I'm going to get this bloody right. So I went online... and typed in how to pronounce this. And then I realised that when you type in your name online, especially the surname, there's 10 different versions of people who have the same name, but they pronounce it differently. There's one video where there's it's spelt Nguyen. Now, the majority of people say it's Nguyen. So it should be Huyin Nguyen. I hope I got that right. But there was... so many versions online where people pronounced it differently, and I was like, oh my god, how am I meant to get it right if even the people who use it as their name don't get it right? But then I remembered that my surname, part of my surname, is Buchanan, and some people pronounce that three different ways, so I tried. I apologize. I tried my best there. So thank you to Patreon subscribers Nguyen Win, Yasmin Nixon, I got that one right. Sarah Thompson, I got that one right. Andrea Lindenberg, I got that one right. Thank you, everyone, for becoming Patreon subscribers. Lots of goodies. Lots of people on their social media tend to share photos and stuff like that. I don't share them on social media. They are for patrons only. We've got a massive back catalogue of everything up until episode 50 and onwards, I think. So there's lots of goodies in there. So it's definitely worth having a... for £2 a month, bargain. What else can I talk to you about? We're going to go into some stuff in a bit and some quiz questions. Just come back from visiting my dad and my stepmom. That was lovely. I haven't seen them in ages. So that was really nice to go and see them. They're going to go and live overseas. So it'll be by the time next time I see them, they will be in a different country. Weird situation. Going back to my old family home. And saying goodbye to that was a really weird situation. Anyway, that was done. I enjoyed that. Did Crime Con. That was good. Do you know what? Meeting up with lots and lots. Thank you to roughly probably the 10 people who we met at Crime Con. To be honest, in Podcast Row, there wasn't really that much going on. It was quite quiet. to be honest, it got to the point where the bulk of the podcasters were actually lying on the floor, having a giggle. having a couple of hangover pints, and then we were playing who can throw the beer mat the furthest, because nothing was going on. But to the 10 people we did meet, that was lovely. Best bit was hanging out with all the other podcasters and getting massively pissed. I travelled up with Paul from True Crime Enthusiast on the Friday. We drove all the way up to Glad. Well, he drove. I just sat and waffled. And then we turned up at the hotel. We went, right, pint. And we drank from 2 o'clock in the p.m. until about 4 or 5 in the a.m. And then turned it. Oh, really, the next morning was great, because all of my stuff for CrimeCon was in the back of Paul's car to keep it safe, because I was staying in a cheapy hotel. He's staying in an expensive hotel. All his stuff was there, and I couldn't get access to it. He wasn't answering his phone. He wasn't waking up. He was late. So after about an hour and a half, literally the show was about to start, I'd got nothing set up because I was waiting for him. I finally found out what room he was in. I went upstairs. I started banging on his door, and I heard a like that. And I called him at the same time, and he picked up the phone before he opened the door. I went, Paul, the show's about to start. We need all the stuff. So I could hear him grab his car keys. And he opened up his hotel room door, and he was stark bollock naked. And in one hand, he was holding the car keys towards me. In the other hand, under his ear, he was holding the phone. And with his leg, he was trying to keep the door shut because he was stuck. And he was talking to me, and then halfway through, I had to say to him, Paul, you don't need to talk to me on the phone. I'm talking in front. He was that pissed. He didn't realise that he was still talking to me and yet looking me in the eye. It's very weird. I was looking him in the eye as well. But it was good fun. Lovely to meet everyone who was there. Twisted Britain, Paul from True Crime Enthusiast, Adam from UK True Crime was there, Lady Justice was there, Twisted Britain was there, Morbidology was there, who else was there, Cult Vault was there, What's Up Doc was there, The Troubles were there, lovely to see True Crime, Scotland Murders, lovely to meet them finally, Sally and John from True Crime Investigators, Crimepedia were there. It was I've probably missed people out, but there was a really nice group, and we had a good time. And then we got really pissed. Get rid of our hangovers, started getting drinking again, and then we started boozing at 3 again, and finished boozing about 5 a.m. My health is not good that day, because I survived on pizza and 4 a.m. kebabs. And as everyone who knows who saw me there, surviving on a mixture of Diet Coke, painkillers and Baby Bell cheeses. Anyway, it's good fun. Good fun. Next year, I'm planning something exciting. I will announce it at some point. I'm currently in the process of assembling some very exciting podcasters. We are going to do something really exciting. And the idea is that it will be something incredibly affordable for everyone. Because I think sometimes people get charged things that they shouldn't. If you've been to our live show, we only charge £12. The new one has transaction fees on top, which is really annoying. This new thing, I want to do this at a budget price and make it... I'm not going to give away too much, but it's going to be amazing. Anyway, you will know more about it when we get round to that. Let's do a big thank you to two people who've donated to the podcast. They've done this through the supporter link, which I think is in the show notes. I think Acast put that there. Or if you click on links, you can go to support this show. And that also goes to... you can send it via the Murder Mile website, which is great. So thank you to Anne-Marie Cummings for your very kind donation, and Taps Nose to an anonymous listener from America. Now that limits it down to just over 300 million people? Yeah, that's right, isn't it? So it's one of 300 million. So I have kept your details anonymous. Well done. Going to go and dive into some quiz questions now. Oh, cool. I'm still looking at it crunchy. It looks great. Quiz questions. I will do the answers very shortly, and then we'll dive into some extra stuff in this episode. So, question number one. What famous London landmark is in front of Denham Street? Question two. Difficult one. To the nearest 10 metres, I'll make it easy. I've made it easy by adding to the nearest 10 metres. How long is Denham Street in metres? Ooh, cough. Question number three. What town in Shropshire was Jack born in? Question number four. Where did Jack go to boarding school? That was almost a sentence there. Question number four. Where did Jack go to boarding school? Question number 5. What club was underneath Jack's flat? Question number 6. According to his valet, how much booze did Jack drink a day? I have to say, we drank much more than that in Glasgow. Jesus Christ. Rough. Question 7. Ada Knight went by 3 other names, but what were they? Question 8. What country was Jeannie born in? Question 9. How much money did Mr. Question 9. How much money was Mr. Unwin worth today? And question 10. Jack was worth £2.6 million today. Oh, I've doubled up the question. That's a bit stupid. Okay, so we ignore question 10. Question 10 is basically I've written Jack was worth £2.6 million today, but how much was Mr. Unwin worth? Which is question 9. So yeah, there's only 9 questions. Oh, I tell you what, if you get question 9 and or 10 wrong, I'll give you 2 points because that's technically question 9 and 10. There you go, there's 10 questions, but one of them is worth 2 points. Or non-points. That's not even a word. Right, let's dive in some extra stuff to do with this. Let's not do that. I'm just going through my details. The will was the interesting one. So this is where the case gets really confusing. Is the will. So originally, the will that was that bequeathed all of his estate, all of Jack's estate to Ada Knight. This is where, if you listen back to the episode, you can hear that it's all in there. I've tried not to signpost it too heavily, but it's all clearly written in there. He got that piece of paper. He wrote down exactly what he wanted to happen. He had it signed and dated by himself. He had it signed and dated and witnessed by 2 witnesses. And then he sent it to his lawyer. And the lawyer took that document and he signed and dated it and stamped it and then officially registered it. So that was the official document. But the other 2 documents after that, the one dated 4th of December 1912, leaving the estate to Ada Knight and Jeannie Baxter, that was null and void because he wrote it on a piece of paper and he said what he wanted to do with it. He got it witnessed by 2 signatories and dated, but he didn't do anything with it. If you're a Patreon subscriber, I've put some of these documents in there, and if you look at them, it's shocking. It's like it's a scrawl. It's barely legible. There's no legal marks. It's not dated, not date stamped. It's entirely redundant. So I think too often people seem to think you can write something on a paper and get someone to witness it and it's legal, but it's not. You've got to go through all the right channels to ensure that it's right. What else is going on? The kind of argument about a week before Julian's death. I keep calling him Julian. His name is Julian. We call him Jack. The argument in the flat just a week before. So Jack had obviously kept Jeannie and Ada away from each other in order so he could keep kind of an affair going with both of them at the same time. I don't know how he managed to do it because they both seem to come to his flat quite a lot. And it's kind of difficult for kind of Jack to go to Jeannie's because Jeannie is a prostitute and she sees different men every day. So there's kind of a real balancing act there. I think what makes this story interesting is they're both cheating on each other. So they're both as bad as each other. And they both, you know, you could say that they both deserved happiness, but both unhappiness as well, because they should both just grow the F up and stop out. They're treating each other as commodities, which is what makes it a really tragic story. But on this day, this was the day where the hall porter let Ada into the flat. He knew Ada. He'd seen her face before. He didn't know that there was kind of a love triangle going on. She was having an affair with Jack, while Jack was also having an affair with Jeannie, just to make everything complicated. That's when they argued, and I'm being really cautious. I'm stumbling with this slightly, only because in some parts of my notes, I've written the other names are under. So sometimes I write Julian, sometimes I write Julian meaning Jack, sometimes I write Jane meaning Jeannie, and sometimes I write instead of Ada, I write Lally, which is one of her other names. Don't worry, I haven't given away the full answer to the question. So when they were there saying, you need to decide which one of us it is, apparently, see, this, there's not much evidence for this, because the police did turn up originally. Originally, there was two points at which Ada turned up. Apparently, Ada turned up at 12:30. The police were called because they were arguing, but the police decided this was a civil matter. It wasn't a criminal matter. No one had been attacked or anything. So the police were like, to Ada, you need to leave. Everyone needs to calm the hell down, which is why Ada went back later on and the argument kicked off again. She did strike Julian. She punched him in the face, cut his lip. His lip had dried blood, a bit of a cut on it when they did the autopsy on him, which I'll dive into in a bit. Apparently, Ada tried to throw herself out the window when he admitted that he didn't love her anymore, that he wanted to be the husband or boyfriend or whatever of Jeannie. Did he promise to marry? Did Jack promise to marry Jeannie? Yes, it's likely that he did. He had a tendency of kind of professing his love to lots of different women, but he hadn't been married before. He'd been engaged before, but obviously he never really committed to marriage. So a couple of days before, Jeannie had said to her maid, Teresa Panatello. I left that name out because I always stumble over it. Not very good with names. That Jack Hall had promised to marry me on the next Tuesday by special license. So special license means that in an emergency you can go to the Church of England and a special license can be granted by the Archbishop of Canterbury if required. Obviously he's a man of money, so he can kind of do that. Let's just scroll down a bit. I put this in the episode. The day before the murder, Monday the 14th of April, having already agreed that they were going to get married, Jeannie went to visit a house in St. John's Wood, a very nice part of town, and she said to Teresa, her maid, she said, Hall, as in Jack, has spoiled everything between me and my friend, Mr. Unwin. If he will not marry me, as he has promised, could anyone be punished very much who shot him dead? Now, that was coming from her maid, so obviously we don't really have Jeannie's word for that, but apparently that's what she said. That night, Jeannie went out to the Palm Court, the nightclub. She was out partying, she was having fun. She was told by the valet that throughout the day, Jack was not too well. He was bedridden. He was still drinking. He was very depressed. We don't quite know why, whether that was just part of his mood or something like that. The valet had asked her to turn up to check on him. That's why she turned up at the flat and why she was still there in the morning. The day pretty much is, as I've mentioned in the episode, so I'm not going to do too much. The final will, which is known as Exhibit 3, so it's kind of underhanded in a way. If you look at it, it's a piece of paper. It's scrawled. It basically is. I've got the text down here, which you can read. It's very basic. But what Jack did was he spoke to Lewis, his valet, and said, I need you two to sign this. He folded over the paper so he couldn't see what it was, so they couldn't see what it was, but he got them both to sign it. Because they were his servants, obviously they didn't question him about it. This document technically isn't legal for another reason, because they were asked to witness the document. But your job as a witness is not just to say this is a document and witness it. Your purpose is to witness them, the person themselves signing it. That's what a witness does. Whereas they both said by the time the document came to us, he'd already witnessed it. So he'd already signed it. So basically they witnessed the fact that he had a document, but they didn't witness the fact that it was him that signs it, which is, well, it's important. That's the whole point of a bloody witness. So that was done. Let's scroll down a bit. Obviously, 11:45 a.m., four shots happened. So people said they heard three or four shots. There was a guy called Charles Caswell who was in another room, one of the other flats. He heard the shots. He came out. Apparently, there were four or five shots coming about every 2 or 3 seconds. Some said there were four, some said there were five. Jeannie ran out. She was frightened, and apparently she ran into Mr. Caswell's room. She knew Mr. Caswell. He didn't like her that much, but he's one of the people who describes her as just a common prostitute. At that point, he said that she was hysterical and crying. So this is what makes the episode, I feel, kind of interesting. Jack has suicidal tendencies. He's an alcoholic. He loves having different women around him. She is gearing up to marry a multimillionaire. He ruins the relationship with her. He has asked before to try and kill him or to help him to commit suicide. Don't forget, around this point, he's got a broken hand as well. So it makes it difficult, not just for him to fly, but for him to shoot his gun, even though he did shoot his gun a couple of times at Jeannie's flat. So the question we've got to ask ourselves here is, what's going on? Did he try and kill himself and then threaten her? Did it happen as she said? Was she trying to get the gun off him? She fired 3 times. The shots are not particularly good. One in the chest, one in the arm, if I can remember correctly. And then several into the wall behind him as she fled. So what's going on? Was this a premeditated murder? If it was, her shots weren't particularly good, even though he did eventually die. Jeannie would state, Julian Hall, obviously Jack, greeted her with a remark, "I'm fed up. I have got a fit of the blues." She said that he was very changeable that day. After talking about future arrangements, he suddenly said, "You and I would never get on together if we were married. I can't keep my promise. It is better I should finish it." At that moment, Julian held a revolver in his hand. She thought she was in danger and wrote a hurried note to her servant, i.e. her maid, telling her to protect her child. We'll read that in a second. They're really short. Julian was whistling down the barrel of the revolver. She was terrified. She tried to get the revolver away from him, and in the struggle, 2 shots went off. She and Jack fell onto the bed. She then picked up the gun, fired 4 more shots into the ceiling. It was actually really the wall. And as rapidly as possible, and then she ran out and shouted for the valet to get the doctor. Jeannie tried to return to the room before Julian died. Charles, who was the neighbour, stopped her. First officer on the scene was PC William Thornett. He was on duty on Shaftesbury Avenue and was called to Denham Street. Jack was bleeding from the nose and the mouth. At that point, he was still alive but gasping for breath. PC stopped Jeannie Baxter and she admitted, "I did it. I shot him 4 times. We arranged to do it." She was excitable and crying. She was returned to Mr. Caswell's room because the PC was afraid she might jump out of the window. The revolver was found in the room, as were the papers, as mentioned, the wills and the previous wills. Let's drop down. So these notes, so there's 2 notes. They're only short. One was in Julian's handwriting. This is Exhibit 3, and it says, "I have already left to Miss Jean Baxter, Jeannie O'Kane, my estate I have for them and for the maintenance of her daughter, Jeannie Baxter. It was signed and witnessed on the 14th of April, which is the day before, Julian B. Hall." We're not too sure why it was signed the wrong day. In a box below was written, "Lewis Royal and Nellie Champion." It's all handwritten and it's hastily scrawled. Exhibit 6 was a note from Jeannie Baxter's handwriting. It was found on the dressing table and it literally says, "Teresa, dear, please look after Jeannie, my daughter. My darling love, as in Jack, has ruined my life. J. Baxter." Underneath, she'd written, "Please ask Mr. Unwin to help you for my sake and say sorry for all that has happened, Jean." These are all found in the room. So whether this was a joint suicide thing that went wrong, because they both seem to have suicide notes there, we just don't know. It's a really, really weird one. 4 bullet holes were found in the north wall, roughly in and around where the head of the bed was. There was also 1 in the east wall near where the bell was, just left of the fireplace. In total, 5 shots. 1 hit Jack in the arm, the other hit him in the chest. No signs of a struggle. The armchair was where it had been left. The table was tipped over. But Charles Caswell would later admit that it was him who'd knocked it over as he was trying to force Jeannie out of the room. I think that's pretty much it. There were cigarettes still in the ashtray, an open bottle of brandy on the floor. What else was there? Let's go down. There was a large amount of alcohol in his system. According to Lewis, Jack had a really high tolerance for alcohol. But in the days leading up, even though he would drink kind of on average, his average was about 1.5 bottles of brandy. He said that in some points that would increase to about 3.5 bottles of brandy, which is a bloody lot. Percy Edmonds, the divisional police surgeon, arrived at noon and saw the body in bed, half lying on his left-hand side with his head turned over his left shoulder. Blood was trickling from his mouth and nostrils. He had a bullet entry 4.5 inches above the right nipple, no powder burns, and an exit wound at the back, suggesting it had... he'd been shot from a couple of feet away, they reckon. Another bullet in the right arm... 2.5 inches above the flex of the elbow. Again, no powder marks. This was not fatal and it was not deep. So it was the one to the chest that got him, because it went through the first rib, perforated the large vein and the windpipe, and passed through the upper part of the lower lobe of his left lung. So it took him a little while to die. When they looked at him, as mentioned, there was a small cut on his lip, of which where he'd been hit by Ada a couple of days ago. But apart from that, no other injuries at all, apart from, obviously, a fracture to his hand. Cause of death was shock and hemorrhage. His stomach was empty, had no solid food, and that he hadn't eaten for several days. Contents of his stomach was a dark brown. It smelt strongly of brandy, and they said it was a mix of stomach bile, brandy and blood. Dr. Spilsby was the pathologist on this. He confirmed that the two bullet wounds could not have been inflicted by one shot. This was suggested during the trial. He also, where was this? He said that the bullets were fired from at least a foot away and probably a distance of at least 3 feet. Dr. Percy agreed with Spilsby's findings. Spilsby also pointed out that Hall was right-handed and that the wound to the chest could have been inflicted if held in the right hand, but it could not have been done with the left. If both wounds were self-inflicted, the arm must have been inflicted first and then the left hand, so obviously he was shot in that arm. There was a lot of talk during the trial about whether this was suicide or whether it was murder. It was determined that it was manslaughter at the end, because obviously there was no one in the room, so they couldn't really determine whether, as she had said, whether he'd asked her to try and kill him, whether there was a bit of a struggle on the bed. It was hard to determine. And I think that was it. That's went to court. She was sentenced on the 31st of July 1913. It started on the 3rd of June. It was a bit on and off the trial. She was sentenced to 3 years penal servitude for shooting Hall. She was acquitted of murder but convicted of his manslaughter. And I think that is it. Obviously, there was a big probate court afterwards, and that is where they said... Jeannie was not able to be his estate was not hers, even though the last will had said that, because the last will was not valid. I've been through the situation before, when just before Mum passed away, and I found 5 wills, and that was the hard thing, trying to work out which will was the right will and which will had been properly done. Because unfortunately you can buy some of these wills online, and some weren't dated correctly, some weren't signed. So it was a bit of a nightmare in the end. Bit of a nightmare. Which is why you should always do things right. And, says me, I should go and get myself a will done. Otherwise it all goes to Eva and you know she'll just spend it on booze. A settlement was reached on the 14th of August 1913, which stated that £8,000 should be paid to Ada Knight within 1 month, and a further £8,200, I think it was £8,800 actually, within 3 months of the present date, including her costs, which meant it was £16,500, which is just over £2.5 million today. So even though she'd split up with Jack, she came away from this a millionaire. So there we go. So she actually got what she wanted, unless she actually wanted Jack. Jeannie did not. We don't know much more about that. Unfortunately, Jeannie kind of disappears off the face of the earth after that. And unfortunately, because Jeannie's not her name, because she used O'Kane, because she used Baxter, because she sometimes used Hall, because she sometimes used the name Jane, because her date of birth isn't exactly accurate, it's hard to pin down what happened to her after that. But that's that. So let's do some quiz questions. Don't forget there's 9, technically 10, because I fucked up. Question number 1. A crunchy is the greatest chocolate ever. That's just the answer is yes. Question number 1. What famous London landmark is in front of Denham Street? That is the Piccadilly Lights, which is pretty sad at the moment, because in the old days it used to have the Monaco building on it, and it had all of the big neon lights. Over the years it's been stripped away of the neon, and now it's just like an electric board. Now they've got rid of the Monaco building, so pretty much you can go and visit the famous Piccadilly Lights, but they're not the Piccadilly Lights anymore. They're just an electric board that you can see anywhere. It's really, really effing depressing. But you know what? Some prick is going to have a nice posh flat. So there we go. Bastards. Question number 2. How long is Denham Street in metres? It is 121 metres. So if you're within 10 metres, I will give you that. Question number 3. What town in Shropshire was Jack born in? He was born in Oswestry. Question number 4. Where did Jack go to boarding school? It was Eastman's Royal Naval Academy in Portsmouth. Question number 5. What club was underneath Jack's flat? It was the Coventry Club. Question number 6. How much booze did Jack drink a day? On average, it was 1.5 bottles of brandy. Question 7. Ada Knight went by 3 other names. What were they? They were Margaret Roberts, Lally Roberts, and when she was using Jack's surname, Lally Hall. Question 8. What country was Jeannie born in? Ireland. And question 9 and 10, because I'm a tosspot. Jack was worth £2.6 million today, but how much was Mr. Unwin worth? That was just over £6 million. $1 million. There you go, people. That was that. I hope you enjoyed that. That was this episode. Next week's episode is a two-parter. Nice, interesting two-parter. Looking forward to do that. And then there's a bit of a gap. We've got 3 weeks, but don't worry, I'm doing something special to keep everyone entertained. So there we go. Thank you for listening, everyone. Thank you for supporting the show. Have yourself a good week. Stay safe. Difficult times ahead for everyone, but you know what? Knuckle down. Do what you need to do. Stay safe. Don't worry about stuff too much. Just try and be solid that we will get through this eventually. Have a good one, folks. Stay safe and be good. Lots of love. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.